Is it possible to be successful and kind? It is. In fact, some would argue that kindness is a key ingredient of good leadership and one that's too often overlooked. James Ree makes this case in his new book, Red Helicopter, A Parable for Our Times, Lead Change with Kindness Plus a Little Math. James has an unusual story. A Korean-American high school teacher turned private equity investor, he became the unexpected chairman and CEO of Ashley Stewart, a company with a primarily black female employee and customer base. James teaches entrepreneurship at Howard University and also teaches at MIT Sloan School of Management and Duke Law School. Here he is to share the key insights from his book.
Hi, I'm James Ree. I am the author, first-time author, of Red Helicopter, A Parable for Our Times, Lead Change with Kindness, Plus a Little Math, published by my friends at HarperOne. I've been teaching about transformation and change and the integrated systems of life, money, and joy in the classrooms at Howard University in D.C. as the Johnson Chair of Entrepreneurship and a Professor of Entrepreneurship. I also have appointments as a senior lecturer at MIT Sloan School of Management and Duke Law School. But I've spent the vast majority of my time outside the classroom doing it as a practitioner, as a longtime private equity investor, particularly in the consumer retail space, as a founder and entrepreneur, and of course, as a CEO. So, are you ready for liftoff? Here are five of the big ideas from my book, Red Helicopter. Big idea number one, the impossible is possible through kindness and math. I know it sounds really simple, and we all know that simple, though, can be very hard. And when done right, simple can scale in a very sustainable way. But simple is hard. I should know because what is the narrative framework of this book involves my deciding to leave my private equity identity and becoming the first time CEO of a company that on the face of it had nothing to do with me. 10 years ago, I was a private equity guy and an investor in Boston with very little operating experience. I had dishwashing and busboy on my resume from high school. And the company that I ended up running for what was supposed to be 6 months and became 7 years was a company called Ashley Stewart, which had a 20-plus year track record of serving and employing predominantly plus-size, moderate-income black women in urban neighborhoods across the country. What made things more unbelievable was that the business did not have Wi-Fi when I first got there. It had 20-plus years of operating losses and not a great set of relationships on Wall Street or with the financial capital markets. And we were at a point in time where the company was arguably 6 to 10 months away or 6 to 10 weeks away from liquidation. So where did we start amidst this chaos and this seemingly mismatched relationship was we had no place other to start than kindness and math. Kindness, beyond not being niceness, we decided, we operationalized it. We unlocked its real definitions by making it the underpinning of our operations. We soon discovered that the true meaning of kindness, which Rousseau and Adam Smith knew 300 plus years ago, was that kindness is fundamentally about setting up a system that invests in other human beings' agency. And we were lockstep in focusing on creating this type of environment that created a safe environment where people could invest in themselves, invest in others, create positive externalities, and be rewarded for it. Math. We focused on math, not accounting. As most mathematicians and artists know, math is an imaginative exercise. It's a discipline that's found in nature that man tries to have dominion over, but man cannot. Math lives at the same transcendent levels as kindness and the laws of physics. Math seeks truth. It does not seek answers according to some accounting system or reporting requirements. By reconciling these two definitions and these two disciplines, kindness and math, we were forced to reconcile other seemingly irreconcilable oxymorons: imagination and execution, home life and work life, and ultimately the definitions of success, both financial success, which we had a fair bit of, and I think more importantly, organizational systemic life success, which is what we did enjoy and which is why we ended up telling the story on the stages of TED many years later. Big idea number two, we should live and operate our lives and our businesses like a helicopter and not as an airplane. Ask anyone, challenge you to also ask maybe the young people in your life, what would they choose? Would they want to be a helicopter or an airplane? I surmise that most people would choose to be an airplane. Why not, right? Airplanes go really fast. They go really high. They're very powerful. And I think perhaps in a more nuanced way, we hold out the hope of being a leader, being a pilot, where we are in control of the destiny of 200, 300, 400, 500 passengers. But if you ask me, especially in this era of accelerating innovation cycles that's fueled in part by advancements in AI, but also fueled by an inflection point societally, anthropologically, and civically, I would rather be a helicopter, particularly over the next several years, if not decades, from both a human perspective and as a professional weaving my way through these innovation cycles. So why? Why would I rather be a helicopter? Well, helicopters, you're right, they can't fly as high. They're not as powerful. They require a lot more maintenance. The upkeep is more expensive. And they do crash more than airplanes. All that is true. But probably flown, helicopters are more agile. They can fly in 6 different directions. They have the gift of vertical lift, which means they don't need a long runway. They don't need a long runway to land. They can pretty much land anywhere. And I think the other important part of helicopters is that you can't carry a whole lot of people, nor can you fit into a vehicle and be carried. In short, I think helicopters and the art of flying it is a pretty darn good symbol for the exercise of agency and entrepreneurship, to really have the skill set to be able to balance that helicopter. And I've heard that flying a helicopter is sort of like trying to balance a marble on a sheet of glass, particularly when you're hovering. But to be able to fly a helicopter means that you're flying in balance. And I think that when you have balance, you are exercising true agency. Big idea number three, agility requires balance. So we should be leading more through our balance sheet rather than our income statement. Societally, for many reasons, one, because it's easier to measure and the relationship is much more seemingly direct, but also because of the influence of media and our short attention span that's in turn fueled by technology, we have primed ourselves to really just focus on the income statement. Think about it, in boardrooms or on squawk boxes, you hear about revenue growth or earnings growth. We never speak about the balance sheet and the investment that it took to obtain those revenue and earnings growth. Instead, we focus on single and binary inputs at the income statement level. I mean, think about it from a country perspective. The granddaddy of all income statement measurements is GDP, which was founded by Simon Kuznets, who he himself, when he introduced the measurement, warned Congress not to use GDP as a single measurement of wellness or the financial and societal health of a country. But we have chosen to ignore that, just as many companies choose to ignore what their balance sheet looks like. Look, I've helped manage billions of dollars of capital, and I've run a company, growth and distressed. And I specialize in inflection points. It's virtually impossible to pivot and to have agility, as any professional athlete would tell you, when you're not in a position of balance. So in the book, in chapter 5, which is appropriately the very middle of the book, the balance point of the book, I reteach readers the principles of accounting, except I do it from a first principle standpoint, from the vantage point of a 10-year-old operating a lemonade stand. And we go through the limits of accounting by showing the readers what is booked as an asset, what's booked as a liability, and more importantly, perhaps, what things are not booked as assets and liabilities because they're, quote, not measurable to certain accounting standards. And I think after you go through this exercise, if you really run your life and you run your business through a balance sheet, it will become increasingly evident to you that the rules of accounting are creating and designing a system that incentivizes behaviors that we are inadvertently following, that it's sort of like a pachinko board where we're the ball going down the pachinko board and we're not really realizing that maybe some of the grooves and rivulets are wired in a way that we don't want them to be. The argument that I'm making in this big idea number three is that we really need to run our lives and our businesses and our society through a balance sheet and take a really good hard look on the things that are not measured per the rules of accounting and take them into account. Big idea number four, perhaps understanding the Korean concepts of Chang and Han can create a more sustainable pattern of growth for the future. Very recently, Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA, was interviewed and his quotes about the importance of suffering went viral. I'm going to paraphrase, but Jensen said that he looks for companies, brands, and colleagues that understand and have been through suffering. And sounding quite like a Buddhist monk, we all know that suffering goes hand in hand with joy. It's very difficult to really appreciate what joy is if you haven't been through the pain of founding a business or going through a very difficult period of time, whether it's at a company or through your personal life. So the Korean concepts of Chang and Han takes things a little bit further. So Chang literally means connectedness. It's a concept of a relationship, of a feeling of mutualism that transcends time and space. It is a positive feeling, a intangible asset that defies measurement. And Han is exactly the opposite. Han is a intergenerational feeling of trauma, of anger, of sadness, of a sorrow that really can't be relieved. I think very realistically, the concept of Chang and Han are more indicative of real life, that we have to live a life that's balanced or lead a company in a balanced way. Not every month, every week, every quarter, and every year are going to grow linearly. It's just not how growth happens in nature or in our personal lives. So maybe if we think about suffering and joy of Han and Chang, maybe more leadership teams with more discerning board of directors and shareholders will realize that some of the greatest growth trajectories of companies occur after a period of stability and equilibrium where the real innovation underneath it, the numbers don't show up until further down the line in a very punctuated way. And finally, the fifth big idea is that maybe the future of things like CSR, DEI, and ESG would better be described in a musical concept called counterpoint. Oversimplifying things a little bit, counterpoint is a concept where the left hand of a piano and the right hand of the piano play two distinct melodies. Neither hand plays a harmony. What emerges, the third melody, is more beautiful than either melody separate. The sound is consonant, not just the optics. The song has real structural integrity. There are no acronyms. So maybe as we think about the future of inclusion and about being human to one another, both in life and also at work, maybe we would be better served to think about our internal org structure as a musical composer would and try to design a system where people can sing melodies, their distinct melodies, with the overarching goal of making the resulting melody sound better. I think that maybe in this way we can strive for counterpoint for multiple melodies, both in the life of business and the business of life. And those are my five big ideas from the book. I hope that you enjoy them and I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, James. That was James Rhee with five big ideas from Red Helicopter, A Parable for Our Times. Lead change with kindness plus a little math. You might also like our book bite for Head and Heart, The Art of Modern Leadership by Kirsten Ferguson. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.